Hello?
Hi Calvin, there we are again, and indeed it's a lot better now.
Much better. Yeah, just as you started talking, it just went into that garbly talk and died on me. I couldn't understand what you were saying. So, please continue.
Yeah, I was just wondering if we can come back to the dynamic of people understanding people. In the Nobel Prizes, which we were talking about, you can see that basically financial interests determine who gets the prize. And I met a couple of people who were working for that or had gotten one. And basically, they discovered that they didn't get all that much money. In most cases, the money that they got didn't cover the expenses that they had in creating the invention.
Yeah.
But if you disconnect the money interest and the fame interest and come back to the understanding that there are people who discover new information. And a lot of them do that outside of the academic centers. I find that most of the people that I interact with went out of academia because they discovered that what they had found could not be integrated there. Or they decide not to go into academia for the simple reason that from the start they discovered that they would not be free to work on what they had already discovered. So there are many people who are doing independent research. You're one of them. There are many others who likewise have come to see that a different kind of understanding is needed to come to the conclusions that they have. But then they also find that a lot of people, especially when they are academically trained, they run into this mental inertia, sometimes also called spiritual laziness, as a result of which they, using the wrong word, they become immune to new impulses.
Yeah.
And
it's trapped. You've got to be careful. Even myself, I have to be careful that when I reach stumbling blocks, the stumbling block could be caused by a lack of sufficient knowledge, but equally it could also be caused because my model is wrong. So I always have to look at, that's why I love testing things that I don't know with my theory. I have to be aware that just as much as I like my theory and it's explained a lot, it could still be wrong or need revision. And away I go, I tackle it, which is why I'm enjoying, well, not really, but I'm persevering with this creating a working model of a star, because it'll prove the theory, but in the process, it's going to increase my knowledge and my understanding of my own work and where things have gone wrong and where they need to be fixed.
Yes, and it's also in the Science of Life website, I looked into this dynamic of reflex conditioning. How do people create reflexes? Why do they have beliefs that don't work? Why is it that they take decisions but cannot untake the decisions? And it's all part of my exploration of formulating how freedom of choice works. In that approach, it is very clear that there is a four-step process. First, you have freedom of choice, which is also known as the uncertainty or the excitement or the not knowing phase. Okay. And then you take a decision about how you relate to that setting. Do you get involved or uninvolved, or do you wait, or do you intentionally pause?
Okay.
And from that decision level, you create a different charge discharge to the environment. You determine your involvement with the environment, which is then operated as a belief. So the polarization of your involvement acting as a belief then conditions your mental processing of the experience of the environment, which when it is connected to the body as driving the body, it is the activity by which you relate to the context, which then goes into a belief activated, called a reflex. And actually, it is a parallel of the relation between the pineal gland, the hypophysis, the organ glands, and the body cells, where you have this top-down transformer of a new realization into body activation. Essentially, it's the dynamic of magic. you have an idea and you turn it into a reality.
Right.
And I got into that because a lot of people are sick because they have a reflex which is dysfunctional. They change environment and the reflex backfires. Or they have a belief and their belief backfires. In any case, they took a decision and that decision is no longer valid. But they are not aware that they took that decision, and as a result, they cannot untake that decision.
Okay.
It actually takes something like a combination of homeopathy and acupuncture, working in the electromagnetic field, to discharge the charge of the decision that they took. But when you look at the functional dynamics of it, it is quite precisely what you described for the atom formation previously. When you take a decision, when you take a new decision, it will either build on the decision that you took before or not.
Yeah.
And the quality of life depends on the coherence of the way decisions build up onto each other. The next decision empower and enhance the decision that you took before? Or will it backfire and cripple the decision that you took before? Actually, when you look at the belief system, you can see that hell is a state in which people cannot take decisions or do not know that they can't take decisions or are denied decision taking. They have it's the state of denial of freedom of choice. Purgatory is a state in which people can take a decision, but they cannot create consistency in decision taking. They can take a decision, but the next decision would actually undo it, bringing them back to hell, so to say. Purgatory is the interface between hell and the free space.
Uh-huh.
At the third level, you have that people know that they can't take a decision, they know they can take a next decision, but they cannot see how they can build on the decisions they took to extend it further. So they come into a creation space called heaven, but they cannot give it concrete and tangible results. To put it in the geometry, the point of decision, and the double decision is the line connecting two decisions, and the first place where they can actually see that they created the decision and can build on that, the heaven construct, would be the triangle. But if you actually want to create decisions which can matter, exactly what you describe about the relationship from mass to matter, a decision which matters needs to have a tetrahedral structure.
Yeah.
So only if you have four choices connecting up in precisely the same logic as what you describe in tetrionics, connecting a point to a line, to a triangle, to a tetrahedron, only then can you create what I call paradise, and that you can have a purposeful decision which can lead to a purposeful intent, which can lead to a purposeful action with a tuned consequence, which is called the four qualities in Buddhism. The right action, the right place, and the right time for the right purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And what fascinates me is that you have mapped that out in detail. You've gone beyond this level of freedom of choice, decision, belief, and reflex as what I would call the point, the line, the triangle, and the tetrahedron. And so I would like to sort of explore with you to build a parallel between the formulation of tetrionics and this insight in the understanding of freedom of choice, which is also the understanding of the integrity of psychology, which is also the understanding of the basis of peace in sociology, and it is also the fundamental dynamic for the preservation of health in life. But first, I need to play with the templates so that I can catch up with the language that you have created.
Mm-hmm.
because it's unfair if I ask you to do work with I need to do work. You have shown that the tetrionics works for physics, and from what I described earlier, the work of Bert Verveen shows that if it applies to the physiology in the physics, then it also applies to the chemistry of the psychology, plus it also applies to the electromagnetics of the sociology, but that means it also applies to the information flows in ecology.
Yeah.
I have the understanding and I pieced together, for me I got as far as having an immense amount of tetrahedrons with principles linked. On the website of integralhealthcare.info, the front page is actually a listing of a whole table full of tetrahedrons, all of which show that dynamic of relating the parts to the whole.
Right.
What I now need to do is my homework. You've shown that it works. You've shown that it works for physics, and Bert Verveen shows that if it works for the physics, it will also work for the psychology, the sociology, and the ecology.
That would be a really good tie. Merge all those different discrete. See, as I said, I've done all the physics. I've touched in on the biology to get my ebook ready, but this would be a great, great building exercise and a good way of tying all this psychological side and the physiological side back in with the work that I've done with just the physics.
If you would be willing, well, in a way, it would be a laziness on my part, perhaps, but in a way not. We could do, a joint venture on that. I can easily show you what I have found, how freedom of choice operates in the psychology, in the biology, and in the cellular consciousness, and how it unfolds, and how you can see that in body, mind, soul, and spirit, you can see the principles at work. You can actually see how that works in somatic medicine, which is used in the West, how the process dynamics is used in the East, in, for example, Ayurveda, how the regulatory dynamics is processed in the Far East, in, for example, meridian medicine, meridian therapy, and how the information processing is done in the Far West in spiritual healing. Once you see it, it is just as simple as what you have found for tetrionics. And I can imagine that I can tell you what I have found, and in your mind you will probably see the building blocks fall in place.
Right.
Which basically would give the everything you showed for physics and cosmology then also applies to psychology and spirituality, because it's all the same principle.
Yeah, well, that was the final book that I had to do, which was biology, which would have covered, basically I'd done the DNA and the codons, found some major problems and decided to stop the chemistry there. But I've done the peptides and how to build polypeptides and bonds and all that sort of stuff to give us the DNA, and then we can just extend the biology out to include the psychology and the physiology and the fields and all the interactions we've been talking about tonight to make a full-blown biology book that takes us right out into the transcendent side of things as well.
Yeah, I'd really like to do that. Because there's so many people, also so many doctors who are given a physical model of reality, and they do not realize that the difference between a cell and a stone is that a stone does not have the ability to express freedom of choice. A cell does. And so physics, which does not include freedom of choice, does not apply to life.
Exactly.
And I have a paper which is called The Blind Spot of Science, and the blind spots of science are life, love, consciousness, and health.
Yeah.
Once you see that it is based on the ability to use freedom of choice, With this construct which I described earlier of the relationship between hell, purgatory, heaven and paradise, then you see that the quality of life is based on exactly the same principle of being able to put tetrahedra in interaction to create larger constructs. But in this case, in the middle of the tetrahedron, there is a pivot of freedom of choice, where the tetrahedron turns inside out.
Right.
And that is what you have as your logo on your website with the Star of David, which is basically that the triangle turning the one way and the triangle turning the other way are superimposed and in balance. They can flip between the two states, and that's where freedom of choice operates.
Yeah.
You actually are able to, in the body you see that the whole body is based on the like a seesaw, like an upside down swing. You want to have a point of balance which is ideally unstable, but right in the point where it is stable in the switching between the two states.
Yeah.
And the more you get to that, and that's what you see in the body. The body temperature is regulated so that most of the molecules are in this switching point between the two states.
Flip state, yeah.
So you have the optimal charge potential so that a minute decision will flip the switch.
Yeah.
And you can actually see that flipping the switch will go from the brain to the plexus to the nerve to the muscle. It's basically a relay switch system. There is never an impulse going on. It's never electrical. It's also phase information. And the body doesn't work with electrical signals, but it works with code. It has four states and it switches between them, and freedom of choice is all about flipping between the state and the opposite state. In the muscles, it would be the agonist and the antagonist. Are you going to pull or are you going to push?
Yeah.
And once you see that, I know, and that's why I got so attracted to what you are doing with the tetrionics. I can see that it is possible to use tetrionics for this quality of life, love, consciousness and health, because when you flip the triangle from the one state to the other, when you can invert the tetrahedron, that is where you find freedom of choice. And the rest is able ability to connect up freedom of choices so they become meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just intelligence gathering and storage and manipulation.
Yeah. And as you said, you cannot do that except in that BEM field, the bio...
Yeah.
Electric magnetic materialization field.
As much as they like to talk about the 100 trillion neurons in your brain all wiring themselves differently to store your memory and everything, that's not what's happening.
It is not how it happens, and you can see that because the body starts from one single cell, just that you start with the tetrahedron, and the tetrahedron unfolds, the first cell, it unfolds. The first cell unfolds by the dynamic of a vortex. The vortex is actually a volume flowing from a surface through a streamline through a point, which is a transition from three dimensions to two dimensions to one dimension to zero dimension to zero dimension point. And that dynamic is the one whereby a cell divides. And so when a cell divides, it is the same as a tetrahedron turning inside out. So a tetrahedron and a vortex is totally equivalent. You can replace a tetrahedron by a vortex anytime. And just as you said, you have the spin direction one way, the spin direction the other way, so the tetrahedron always has an opposite tetrahedron associated with it.
Yeah.
And that's why I have to do my homework and look into the odd and the even organizations. Are they magnetically extending or are they electrically extending, or are they extending the freedom of choice?
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. Yeah. There's a lot that can be developed up because with the plus and minus charge equilateral Planck quanta, It's the same ones and zeros in a computer code. We can, where those ones and zeros reside, determine what that program will be and what it will, what actions it will take.
Exactly, and in the triangles, as you have it, you have the rotation the one way. You also have the rotation the other way. But of course, you also have the situation of the rotation not rotating. Plus, you have the situation that the rotation actually is zeroed out.
Well, yeah, the in the case of Planck quanta, there is no physical rotation. It's just the where the north and south poles lie in that triangle. You can map them as an electrical flow, but there is no actual electrical flow. It's just a static field. And even though you may have a positive field that you can see, if you look at that positive field from the opposite side,
exactly,
see, it's negative.
Exactly. So a positive and a negative is exactly the same, but seen from a different perspective.
Yeah, different side of the coin. Rennie and I term equilateral triangles of energy coins, Q-U-O-I-N, as in like a quantum coin. So either side of these coins, the positive and the negative, if you look at it from one side, you'd say it's a positive, it's heads.
Exactly.
The other side is the negative, it's tails. But electrically, it's just a lump of metal, it's neutral. Because you have a
negative,
it's neutral, which is why you can't detect the electromagnetic field around the body, the electric component, because they come out as neutralized electric fields.
Yeah.
But you can detect the magnetic, it's still there. And knowing the orientation of the north-south for the positive field and the south-north for the negative, once we get really sensitive devices and start mapping these BEM fields, you can then deduce the shape of the field and what individual parts of the field are doing what. You will put them under an MRI just like you do now. You'll have the field there, and then you'll say to the person, think about your earliest childhood experience, and you'll see parts of the human body, the BEM field, light up where that memory is. You ask them to make an action, and you'll see other parts fire off and give instruction to the brain. And that's how we do it. But at the moment, we only track the magnetic, because all these electric fields that exist are neutral. But it's the electric fields that store the pattern, the ones and zeros of all the coding that forms our souls, our consciousness.
Yeah, that's also why the psychics, they have great ease at detecting what is not processed by somebody. Because, of course, a psychic is somebody who has resolved most of the internal conflicts. And out of that has come to the ability to go to a neutral point in their own experience. And a psychic or a sensitive tuned into somebody else will experience what happens in the electromagnetic field of the other, reflecting in their own system. So they will get the experience or the image or the sensation of what the other has denied most strongly.
Yeah.
So it's as if it is popped up to the surface for somebody who is neutrally clean, and then the charges which are kept in the system of the other are sort of projected across. And that's why sensitives most often first experience what the others least want the others to know.
Mm. Ultimately,
basically you call it field coupling. You have two coupled oscillators, but it's a holographic field coupling, so the one becomes a co-processor for the other.
Very sensitive, able to read it. Ultimately, the largest extreme you could do it to, once we're able to measure these fields in 3D, and know where all the energy is, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to copy all the information in a human BEM field and put it into a hard drive somewhere and then read that out at will. Just like an MRI scan, you scan it at a high resolution, put it into a computer, you will have that you then got access to that data, which is literally somebody's ghost in a machine.
For what I know, that has been done. But of course, the military is quite secretive about that kind of stuff. And for the electrical field mapping, Walter Schemp, who's working for on the making of the MRI, the functional MRI, he's gotten very close to what you're describing.
Yeah, he needs to expand his functional MRI out from focusing on the brain to a whole body functional MRI,
yeah,
and increase sensitivity.
Yeah.
He will get results he would never have suspected.
I think he suspects that. I think he's working towards that. But mm-hmm. he still has mathematics, which is... he uses Lie groups and other kind of holomorphic transformations.
Yeah, I just use...
And it would be really nice to see how what you do combined with what he does could make things easier.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But that's what I said. In this group in Cassis, Daniel Dubois, and the Chaos Conference, that's a group of systems theoreticians of very different kinds. System theory is very nice because it has such a multidisciplinary basis. People who understand system theory know that whatever discipline they are in, it is part of a much larger system. And so there are people working with faster than light physics, with bio-holograms, with consciousness mapping, with measuring devices of all kinds. It would be really nice to connect that up to what you're doing.
You've seen that I can touch on just about any field of physics or
yes.
Science, it's probably a better word than physics.
Yeah.
I can touch on anything because the bottom-up approach allows me to model things in my head very quickly. So even if I'm not familiar with the topic, as they begin to explain, I'm building up a model of what I know and comparing it to what they say. And things
yes.
like instantaneous communication across the galaxy even, quite easily done when you now understand the physics. Explaining why twins think the same things is easily explained. Consciousness in a field, easily explained. All these things that they can't quite explain physically at the moment, but they know exist, can now be... what's the word I'm looking for? Can now be...
Herbert Heinlein calls it grokked, to get the full image of it in one go.
Yeah, you can do that, but also strengthened, because what applies, if I can explain it in my terms, well, their stuff in my works, like a BEM field, I know that my BEM field also explains, uses the same parts that explains chemistry, physics, biology, cosmology. So whatever explanation I'm giving is a solid, concrete explanation, even if the current physicists and biology students run away screaming and pulling their hair out. I know.
Yeah, once you understand the underlying pattern, then you can see that in a different context, the pattern will create a different form.
Yeah.
And if you look at the various forms, you might have difficulty to see the underlying pattern unless you go to a different level of abstraction in the thinking.
You've got to think differently, you've got to model it differently, but the beauty is the 5 years I've spent writing up my work and getting to know it gives me a very broad understanding of it all. And we know that anything I develop to help explain their work also has explanations that are tied in with it very closely in all the other fields of science using my work.
Yes.
We can expand on it pretty quickly. I mean, like, if I couldn't, I wouldn't be trying to take on building a star as my first practical experiment. They're easy.
Yeah.
But that's the important one, because if I can build the reactor and have it running, if I get an invitation to go talk anywhere in the world, they're bound to say, okay, it's a theory, it sounds good, you can talk about it for hours, where's your practical results? And I can then say with confidence, okay, what would you like? Clean, limitless energy, like fusion? I'll have it here for you next week. Or I've already done it, here's the results.
Yeah.
Get them to read the work and then try and figure out how I did it.
And that is the whole purpose of science, that you're able to understand the way nature works in such a way that you can actually work with nature rather than against it, and that you can use the principle of nature to produce something which enhances the quality of the universe in that spot.
Work with the current of the river, don't swim against it. That's my best analogy. Every time I've found a solution to things, it's always because the work I do gives me the simplest answers. There are more complex ways of doing it, and I still fall into the trap. I've been trying to build this device here and waiting on parts, and as I'm designing it, I started off with a simple design, I got an even simpler one, and then for some reason I got sidetracked and started building complex constructions. And it's only today, that I, well, last night, that I was sitting there thinking, and I thought, I've gotten off track. I have to go back to my simpler approach, which is what I did today, and went out and got some other bits and pieces to do it in a simpler way. But
wonderful.
It's just unfortunate that even with the knowledge I have at the moment, what I'm doing isn't a case of following a textbook. Nobody's written down what I'm doing. Nobody, there's no one I can turn to say, hey, based on my work, how do you think I should build this? This is as far out on the edge of the frontier of science as you get. Everything I do is completely out of my head, based on my information and my skills. They're not that good in mechanical engineering, but the theory's there, so now I have the time to try and develop the experimental models and get them running, because they're a key part. They'll turn tetrionic theory into the law of tetrionics, because then they'll be proven that it works.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful example for that was where we started with this conversation as well. Basically, what you're addressing now is the pivot of science. The real interest of science is to work with the unknown. You have nothing that you know. You cannot use your knowledge. There's nobody who has the knowledge. You are at the front end of discovery, and you can only discover it by doing it, and by doing it, verify that you actually do understand it. And then with the benefit that you can actually communicate it to others as well. But it does mean that you cannot ask anybody else, and when anybody else asks you, there's nothing solid they can work with, because they're not talking about science, but they're talking about sciencing. And I created that word sciencing a long time ago, because I realized science is not an object, it's always in development, it's like a living body of knowledge. It's always growing and regrowing. It can be sick, it can be dead in parts. But the important part is that people come up with new ideas, and you're an example of that. And as a result, you're totally in the unknown, and the only integrity that you can find is within your own being.
Yeah.
Bringing that out.
Yeah, and as the first, it was just an idea that had to have total faith. It's just like watering the plant. It got bigger and it explained more things. It got better. But along the way, there was a lot of pruning and dead wood and cutting away, as you said, to get it to the shape that it's in at the moment. But right now, I'm ready to take that plant and say, here's a brand new type of plant I've just made, and show it to the botany world. And they'll say, well, beautiful, we've never seen this before. How do you make this tree? And that's where I'm at. I'm doing the practical experiment so I can say the theory works. It's alive, as Frankenstein would have said.
And from what I
that,
see,
give it as a working, fully mature.
Exactly. From what I see, as I mentioned before, you have realized that the tree comes from the seed. What you're offering people is a seed rather than a tree. So some people have difficulty to understand that. But the only way that they can understand it by planting the seed within their own being.
Within their own mind.
Yeah.
Let it grow, tend to it, get rid of some of their old trees and make room for the new one. And then when it's fully grown, it's working. And then if you like, from that they can build their own fusion reactors based on that knowledge. And the fruit of the fusion of fruit of the theory is the fusion reactor, and the fact that they then collect free energy for themselves and their neighbors out of this knowledge.
Yeah. Kelvin, I have the notion that this would be a very good summary of what we have been exploring, and to end the recording here. Because you have now, in the last bit, you've formulated precisely what the whole concept is of exploring the unknown, being it, living it, and discovering it.
Yeah.
Will that work with you, that we end the recording now, and then I'll come back to you and we can see what we can explore further?
Okay.